Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Integrity Matters by Turnitin. And today, we're continuing the part two of a series for reimagining university assessment in the digital world. Today, we're actually going to be looking at the chapter that's titled Reimagining University Assessment in a Digital World. And with me in the house today is Professor Phil Dawson of Deakin University, who's going to be talking and expounding on what this looks like in the current day and age and what we might consider as we reimagine universities assessment. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Chakwadi. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. For people who are joining today's session, just to get a sense of who you are, what you do, what excites you about the work you do at Deakin University, particularly with Cradle.
So I'm the Associate Director of Cradle, which is the Centre for Research and Assessment and Digital Learning. So we're a bit of an unusual centre. We research assessment, digital learning in higher education. Personally, I focus my research on work around feedback, students' capabilities with feedback, how we can improve feedback, and also cheating, academic integrity, and assessment security.
Excellent. Thank you for that really good introduction. Today, we're looking at reimagining university assessment in a digital world. And my very first question is, why is this important, especially now that learning and teaching is evolving?
Yeah, so a funny thing happened when we were doing this book. Not a funny thing, a terrible, tragic, sad thing happened, which is, you know, we had the pandemic. And I think that probably more than anything else has meant that it's the time right now to reimagine university assessment. We need to. A lot of us are returning to campuses now. We need to think, do we keep assessing the way that we were assessing before the pandemic? Do we try to take some of the learnings and wins from the pandemic and go into some sort of new mode? So there's that. And then there's also that technology and society are really progressing really fast. So we want to think about, you know, how do we assess people in an age where an artificial intelligence might be able to do a lot of the things a person's previously done? How do we assess someone when sort of what we expect of professionals is changing and, you know, career changing and all of that is more the norm? So there's a lot of reasons why we want to do that reimagining work right now. It's really timely.
I totally agree with you. I think unfortunately, it did happen while you guys were putting together the book. We had the pandemic, but I think it's also, in my opinion, sort of provided academics, educators around the globe with an idea of what reimagined assessment will look like for the online space. Would you say that there are some trends, or what are some trends in assessment in higher education? And can you share any data that points to success rates in supporting and informing student learning?
So I think probably the biggest trend of recent times has been a real shift away from traditional pen and paper invigilated examinations. So some of that's been a shift to remote proctored exams, and there's a really, you know, substantial multi-increase of those in the past few years. So some of it's that. But also some of it's a shift away from exams to other forms of assessment. I can say that at Deakin, we've gone from hundreds of exams per trimester to, I think at the moment, it's around 50-something. And that's a really significant drop, which means there's a whole bunch of other innovative practice happening in there where previously we might have just done exams. I know in my research, I'm not a Deakin at elsewhere, I've done a lot of interviews with academics about the reasoning behind their assessment decision-making. And there's one particular interview that really sticks with me where I was asking a couple of science academics about their assessment design, and they told me about their exam. And I said, did you ever think about not having an exam? And there's a pause of about 10 seconds in that interview transcript. And then they say, no, not really. But I think the pandemic has forced us into having that thinking, and a lot of us aren't going back to exams.
I think that's really good to hear. I was actually thinking with universities or schools or reopening and students going back into classes, we might be bringing the exams back, but it'll be good to see how we maybe in the next couple of months, see what that looks like in terms of assessment. I want to talk about the three possible implications, and this was discussed in the book. The three possible implications explored in the book, which are renewed focus on the future, the changing nature of teacher assessment work in a digital world, and new ways of thinking about scalability. Can you elaborate on this and give us some more insight to why this is important in the process of reimagining assessment?
Yeah, so assessment needs to function for students' future work. Often tend to assess students on what can they do right now, rather than how can we equip them with the capabilities they need for the future. So it's partly that, and that ties into some ideas around evaluative judgment, which is your capability of seeing what quality looks like in your own work and the work of others, you know, self-assessing your own work, being able to judge if someone else is practicing safely, those sorts of things. So we need that renewed focus on the future. There's also a bit of a technology element in there as well around that. In the book, in a different chapter, I write about something called cognitive offloading, which is where you use tools to reduce the sort of mental burden on a task. And yeah, writing something down to remember it later is cognitive offloading, but so is using a calculator. And you know, arguably so is using an artificial intelligence writing tool to write your essay. And we need that sort of focus on the future around what do we want to assess? How do we want to assess it? That sort of leads on to what might a future authentic sort of assessment look like. How can we assess and think not just about authentic assessment for now, for the way that work practices happen now, but how can we think of what work might look like in the future for our students? In the book, I am slightly pessimistic and say we shouldn't just imagine sort of the perpetual march forward of society and further technology. We might want to think about the challenging situations our students might find themselves in as well. Now, that's the first one of those that you talked about. The second one is teacher work. And I think assessment, it's driven so much by what teachers do. It's an inescapable thing for students, assessment, but it's something that teachers just have so much influence over. So we need to look at teacher work. We need to think about things like teacher workloads. We need to think about how different pieces of our education systems sort of push or nudge teachers towards certain practices. In that project I was talking about before, where we talked with a lot of academics about their assessment design practices, at one university there was a drop-down box with a list of assessment types that you had to choose from when you proposed a new assessment. That drop-down box was an incredibly influential shaper of the assessment that happened. So we need to think about sort of teachers as assessment designers, what influences their work, what's reasonable. If we're having all of these new expectations on teachers, how can we keep the workloads manageable? And this sort of feeds onto the third point, which is scalability. And in the book, we talk about scalability of different approaches to assessment, particularly drawing on this notion of complexity from the computer science literature. So there, computer scientists, when they're designing an algorithm to deal with a problem, they will think about, for every additional data point, how much more processing power do I need? And we sort of adapt that notion to the idea of assessment. And for every additional student, how much more sort of teacher time do you need? We need to try and find really effective assessment approaches, and particularly assessment for learning approaches, that scale better than linearly, that don't require double the time for double the students. I think the whole sort of MOOC experiment has taught us a bit there. So we've learned that things like peer feedback is something that we can design, and there are infrastructures out there that will enable us to do effective peer feedback approaches that don't require a ton of teacher time.
You actually hit the nail on the head. I think one of the biggest challenges when it comes to assessment design is thinking about how much time am I going to spend developing the assessment? And secondly, in a situation where there are over 500 students, how do I manage the fact that I need to mark them, give explicit feedback, and give it in a timely manner, and also allow that exchange with the students in terms of providing that level of dialogue to ensure that they get the feedback. So I think thinking critically about how we scale is very important. So thank you for sharing and expounding on those three implications. Now, as the world is evolving and the rationale of assessment remaining to prepare learners for this world as we know it, what do educators need to consider as they reimagine and rethink assessments?
So I think some of the fundamentals of assessment still remain. So we still need to be concerned about validity, for instance. We need to be concerned that assessment, as much as we can, assesses the thing we think we are assessing. We need to be concerned about alignment, you know, that assessment assesses the learning outcomes and that those learning outcomes are also taught, because it's unfair to students and unproductive if we don't have that sort of alignment. So some of those things still matter. Authenticity really matters, and I'd say matters even more now. And, you know, before I talked about how we need to have sort of future authentic assessment, we need to think about students' future lives, all of that still matters. I think at the moment, we're at a point where how we use technology in assessment and learning and how that sort of represents what happens in the workplace, that's particularly important now. So we really need to consider what tools do we let students use when they're doing their assessed work, for instance. Some work is coming out now about artificial intelligence writers. That's a space that's really developing really quickly. And, you know, there are people now who are professional copywriters who don't sit down and write copy. They sit down and use those tools to produce copy that they then tweak. So the idea that sort of assessment should always assess the untarnished, pure voice of the student, I don't think that holds anymore. So we really do need to think about sort of future technology and how that works in with assessment. I mean, for me as well, my two passion areas of feedback and cheating, academic integrity, assessment security, those really matter as well. I think one thing we found during the pandemic was for some students, that feedback dialogue that they have with their educator became the only personalized piece of their education. So it started to matter a lot. Mm. And similarly, we found, you know, that cheating depends on which bits of the literature you look at, but my judgment on what I've seen, cheating did go up over the pandemic. And some of the genies that have been let out of the bottle in the form of, you know, multi-billion dollar publicly traded companies that largely make their money off helping students cheat, I don't think they're going to go away. So we need to think about how are we going to deal with that in assessment.
Really good points there. And you already started the conversation with regards to future authentic assessment. I think whilst I was reading the book, I was in my head, I was thinking, we're still struggling, I would say, to a certain degree, getting our assessments authentic or getting it close to authentic as possible. Now, there's this I'll call it an encouragement to think more futuristic. So according to the book, we need to go beyond assessment being merely authentic for the present. I think this was from Gulliker's and his co-authors. And then and think about a new type of future authentic assessment, and this may be required. In my head, I was thinking, what would we need to do differently while we're thinking future authentic assessment? So what does this entail?
I think some of it entails looking at the future of work in a discipline. And, you know, if you're an academic who's been in the academy for a while, you still probably maintain those connections with people in your industry who are out there doing the practice. You still keep your finger on the pulse of what the new developments are. So you probably have some sense of where the profession is going.
Oh.
So it's about trying to understand that, trying to keep up on the sort of AI literature that exists in your discipline, I think is really important. So if you're in healthcare, where's the AI literature going in healthcare? What stuff is AI starting to take over from people? And, you know, if you look at, say, medical imaging, some of the technology around medical imaging does more of the job, which frees people up to do some of the higher level tasks. I think that's a lot of where the shift is for future authentic assessment, going from getting students to do all of it to thinking, which parts of this are going to be done by machines, computers, et cetera, and how does that enable me to assess the sort of higher level, higher order learning outcomes instead? That's sort of what I would suggest to people. If I can throw in just a little extra thing, recently we've done some work, so that's myself and Carlos and Lee have done some work on authentic feedback. And that's the notion that we might want to not just look at the way that work happens in students' future lives, we also might want to consider how feedback happens in those lives and how can we try and model some of the feedback practices in an authentic way within our assessment and feedback at university as well. So I'd bundle that in with future authentic assessment as well.
That's very interesting. I'd really love to see that work on authentic feedback and seeing how we can start to mirror what happens or how we give feedback in the workplace. I think you've slightly touched in this. Now, with the move for learning and teaching to be focused on developing learners to do things machines cannot, what do you feel or what do you think is the role of assessment in this development?
I mean, I think assessment ultimately credentials people and says, you know, the institution says you can do these certain things. So assessment really needs to think about what are the circumstances, what are the tools, what are the affordances of technology that students are allowed to use to demonstrate these outcomes and what's going to be forbidden. And beyond just thinking about it, we need to make that really clear and transparent. I would love to see it if we move towards statements of learning outcomes that say what supports were available to people while they demonstrated those learning outcomes. So, you know, the example I often give is we want the pilot who can fly the aeroplane when the instruments fail. And we also want the pilot who can fly the aeroplane when the instruments are working. And you want to be on the aeroplane where they can do both of those things. Learning outcomes in that sort of space need to be specified with respect to what assistances, what cognitive offloads, what technology affordances were available to this person while they demonstrated these outcomes. So we don't end up with either the pilot who can only fly with instruments or the pilot who's got no idea what the instruments do.
Very exciting. I do like that analogy of having the pilots do both things. Talking about machines, we know that AI is now playing or has an impact in how we're doing things in universities, even in anything besides a university. How do we prepare ourselves for a world where AI exists in a university, especially when we're looking at how we're doing assessments?
Yeah, so I think it's a mix. So part of it is a really optimistic mix because I think technology is progressing in the ways that it can support us to do assessment as well. I'm looking forward to seeing all of the interesting things that we're going to be able to do with technology in assessment. I believe it's what's called stealth assessment, which is this idea of just get people to do work. So moving away from explicit moments of assessment, where we say, right, you're being assessed right now, to just get people to do work and tick off the outcomes when those outcomes are met. Now, that's something we can do with real human people watching other real human people, but the scalability of it is really impossible. But I really love that sort of idea for a future for assessment in universities. I do have some concerns about sort of the monitoring of people through AI. I think I'm somewhat of a sort of moderate person in that, where my view is that some of the stuff that we do is surveillance, some of the stuff that we do normalizes surveillance to students, and that's somewhat concerning. But I see it ultimately as a, you know, pragmatically, the benefits outweigh the negatives. So it's worthwhile for me to deploy a lot of these AI technologies. But we want to do that in a really consultative way. I know that Simon Buckingham-Shum at UTS has done some really great deliberative democracy work around the use of artificial intelligence in education at UTS, where they've actually gotten students in and had really meaningful consultation and sort of co-creation of what the structures or the policies should be in this space. And I think that's a really promising way forward. So I guess sort of to more directly answer your question, I'm really excited for the ways that it can help us in assessment, but I think we just want to tread carefully, be really consultative and not get too caught up in the panic or the hype.
To your point with regards to where the world is going, it's not necessarily shutting it down. It's more thinking about how can we use it effectively. And to your point, how can we take a consultative approach to ensure that we're doing it in the ethical way and we're not steering away from, I'm not going to say the norm, but steering away from what we would consider ethical practice.
Mm.
And I do also want to call out the stealth assessment thing you were talking about. I think it just reminded me of a time where you're looking to get kids to eat vegetables, but you sort of blend it and put it in something else and they end up eating it. So I think it could be a good approach not to call out an assessment as, hey, you're going to be assessed today, but trying to, the idea of getting students to engage in activity and ticking off the learning outcome, it could be a really good strategy to keep people, learners engaged. So I'm really curious to see how that is replicated across our universities, if that becomes better practice. The other angle is with regards to big data. We know that part of the assessment design process is reviewing maybe feedback or data from past run assessments. But what role does big data play in the process of reimagining assessments?
Yeah, so there's a great chapter in the book from some researchers from the Open University who really do have a lot of big data. They do a lot of online courses, really big ones, have existed for a long time in that sort of mode. So they can really see sort of which assessments are sort of working and which ones are problematic. And there is a history of people doing that with things like multiple choice items. There's a whole bunch of statistical analyses you can do with multiple choice to really help you understand what's working, what's not, what items are problematic for various ways. So I think that's great. I mean, I think more broadly, hopefully we're able to find ways to work together across institutions with big data to try and wrangle some of the big problems. I think sort of around issues of contract cheating or that sort of thing, there's a need for sort of data sharing and doing really big data analyses across many institutions to try and find patterns. I think that'll be something that'll really help us. I'd love to see, for instance, some analysis of the types of assessment that appear most vulnerable to contract cheating. To do that, we need to pull together really, really big data sets. No one institution can really answer that on its own. I think there's things to be gained from that. There's also things just individual educators can gain from, some really mundane things that probably don't even actually tick the big data box. So, yeah, that's going in and seeing one day, what proportion of students are accessing the feedback information I provide. So those sorts of things, trying to see the effectiveness of some real micro level practices with some really rudimentary data.
I think you just called out a lot of topics for research there. So anyone who's watching might want to pick up on that and just start looking into those areas. As we wrap up, what would you say as a form of advice or strategies that you can share with educators who are, even universities who are looking at some best practices to begin and most importantly, sustain the process of reimagining their assessments?
So I think a lot of the challenges in this area are not just having good ideas. We've done a range of projects where we've spoken to innovative educators who do wonderful things. And the ideation stage is not the challenging part. It's the doing. So yeah, some of the things that we've observed, really effective educators that are able to get change to assessment happening and sticking. There's a lot of consultation. So there's a lot of talking to people and winning them over. There's, you know, talking to your department head before you send the change paperwork through to get them on board with it and know that they're going to be on site when it goes through. There's convincing students that an assessment change really matters. And in some areas, that's really hard. I spoke to some academics in law, and apparently law student societies are one of the really difficult hurdles to overcome with assessment change in law, because a lot of them want quite traditional assessment practices. So they need to be convinced that these new practices are going to be okay. Oh, there's also a kind of a weird one around navigating process. So part of it's about kind of knowing how much you can get away with change. Assessment is one of the most highly regulated parts of educational practice, and for good reason, because you know, it does matter how we assess and that we do it well. But some of the educators who really were successful in being quite nimble with assessment were able to put in the formal paperwork something like 100% within semester assessment, and then fill in what that container sort of looks like later on. Whereas some people painted themselves into a corner by tightly specifying what every assessment task was in the official paperwork. Now, as an assessment person, I'm probably supposed to say you should overspecify everything and get official approvals every time and all that. But what we observed was people who did that wound up not being able to change their practices sometimes for 2 years. So they were stuck doing the same design. And if they wanted to change it, yeah, if you fill the paperwork out now, you can change it in 2 years' time. So some of it's knowing your sort of paperwork context, and it's a little bit of kind of street fighting around what can I get away with here and how much can I push this stuff. Mm. And that, all of that stuff was really the hard work of assessment change in what we observed.
What about I know this is a wrap up. Just quickly on the angle of technology involvement in this process, what would you say universities or educators should take into consideration while they're thinking about a reimagining process?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things here. So one of them is to really ensure that the systems that you use, the new tools or whatever, are going to be rock solid and stable, and they're going to last for the future, and your vendor's going to be around and all of those things. I have some bad stories to tell you that I won't go into here about. I tried to use Google Wave. That used to be a thing, and like designed all these assessment tasks around it, and then bang, Google Wave was gone. Google did not support that. Yeah. So it's around, yeah, really think long term in this space. So I think that's a bit of a challenge. But then also there's a competing challenge of enabling educators to go and do innovative practices that use technologies that might be outside the walled garden. And I think that's a really difficult challenge. Some of the best educators I know are kind of breaking the rules. So they're just out there doing whatever the hell they want, and they're getting amazing results, and the students love it, and the students are learning a lot, but they're kind of breaking the rules. So I think there's a hard policy challenge in there around technology. And you know, those people who are breaking the rules, I don't know the specifics, but you know, have they investigated the sort of cross-border data flow privacy legislation around the work that they're doing? Have they looked into all these potential pitfalls that can really matter a lot for students and for the institution from a regulatory perspective? So I think it's hard there.
So thank you so much. I'd like to say a big thank you to Professor Phil for just sharing. I think one of the things I enjoy about our conversation is you come with so much experience, and I'm always keen to hear and learn from what we discussed today. You've also opened up my head with regards to authentic feedback, looking at a consultative approach to co-designing assessments while we're reimagining assessments. So I'd like to say a big thank you for your insights today, and always, always good to have you back on Integrity Matters by Turnitin.
Thank you so much. It's always so much fun.